Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson himself. Pete, how the devil are you?
Why are you laughing at me? You know who I am.
When I said Mr. Pete Donaldson, he sort of looked up like a startled cat in headlights, and it was quite funny.
Because I've got part of the running order on my phone and part of the running order on my screen. I'm still in a state of disarray. My entire office is in bits, and I'm just sort of like going, oh God, I've got to sort my life out a little bit. So yeah, I'm a little bit frazzled.
I'll have you know, I won $150 from Connor Seadog VA just 2 nights ago.
Whoa, what happened? What were you betting on?
It wasn't really a bet. It's one of those Twitch streams where you have to react to memes, and if he laughs, basically, he has to pay you money. So he said, if you make me laugh, I'll give you $150. And I think he laughed three times in the space of 2 to 3 hours. So he did a pretty good job. But I defeated him with a video of a Yoda puppet, like a silly puppet of Yoda telling a joke, and it was 36 seconds long, and I think you have to pay $1 for every second that the video airs, so it cost $36. So I guess technically it was more like $120 profit, but he laughed on the last sort of 10 seconds and I was vindicated, and now I'm a rich man and I'm going to spend it on something great like a hat.
I'm not sort of across the whole kind of the sort of business case around Twitch and streaming and stuff like that. So hang on. So you had to pay to play with the meme. You had to kind of I see.
So he's got this thing called Streamlabs, and like choose an amount of money. You post the link to the video and then pay the amount of money in terms of how long the video is, and then off you go, and then it'll appear on his screen, and he watches it in the live show. I have to say, Twitch is kind of advanced, and it's pretty good. I've been entertaining the idea of doing it, but like, I just don't think it's really me. Like, I enjoy doing one stream a month for 2 hours. But it requires a lot of energy. It really does.
Every now and again, I have these sort of little fantasies, because I'm not doing a radio show anymore. And I just sort of think, well, I do like playing video games, and it would be nice to sort of have a little kind of, set of streams that I did every week. It would be quite nice to sort of have an excuse to play video games as a thing to do, to produce content, rather than just sort of looking around my house going, I've got to do all this stuff.
You should definitely do it. You'd be really good at it, actually. Like my other friend, Pete, he's kind of like you, but American. He is very hyper and kind of comedian. He's quite funny. You would do it quite well, I think.
He's a very charismatic young man. Has to be said.
He's very good, but I think you could do it. I could see you doing playthroughs of Monkey Island and retro games. What kind of games would you actually play?
Like the really kind of offensive sexual ones, like Leisure Suit Larry in the 90s.
Oh,
Redneck
God.
Rampage. Like really horrific one.
Crystal. Rampage.
Yeah, there's a real sort of vogue. It was around about the time you had like Dave Mirra's Triple X BMX sort of games. You know, the kind of new metal when wrestling was very offensive and very sexual. And yeah, it was kind of like the turn of the millennium, Jackass and, you know, the Suicide Girls and like just like a lot of kind of quite stupid sexual stuff, and it was reflected in the video games where there was just boobs in video games for no bloody reason.
And that is what you would choose to play?
No, I'd just be one of those hot tub streamers just sitting bath of beans.
God.
Show my bum
one image. It's certainly be interesting to see how that would do, but let us know, guys. Should Pete start a Twitch stream, and what should he do, and should he play inappropriate video games? Probably. We've got a story this week that's titled Moments of Terror with a Japanese Customs Check. Hi, Chris. Pete, I hope you're well. I was reminded of my run-in with the Japanese customs people from your warning not to do drugs in Japan last week. I was travelling to Japan with two of my friends when we were all lads under the age of 20. We had a gruelling 22-hour layover in Moscow, and I'd bought copious amounts of cigarettes as we were all rather heavy smokers at the time. We'd also theoretically not be able to buy them in Japan as we were underage. Right as the hype for our imminent landing was reaching its peak, we were handed the customs declarations form, which I'd completely forgotten about. We realised that we were in clear violation of the customs rules as we were all under the age of 20 and hauling considerably larger amounts of cigarettes than the allowed 200 into the country. Oh, good God. After some deliberating on the issue, I said that while it is rather unlikely that they would go as far as checking our bags, I also noted that as the Japanese Rozzers are known for not messing about, one would assume that the customs officials should be treated with similar fearful respect as the police. We decided to just admit everything and beg for mercy as stupid young foreigners. As the only person who spoke Japanese in the group, I was elected to do the grovelling. I mean, if you're lucky at this point, you could probably sneak through. I think I've had my luggage checked once while passing through customs.
I've had a couple of times. They're usually pretty good. I've had my luggage checked maybe two or three times out of 10. But, you know, it's hard. I imagine it's very, very hard to hide over 200 cigarettes in your back's mind.
Well, let's see how Andy gets on. Andy says, we're all growing increasingly nervous as we landed. This was also not aided by the rather dodgy Russian Burger King food from before the flight sitting in our stomachs. As I'd assumed, nobody tried to check our bags, but we reached the customs officer. My friend was wearing a Christmas hat, scoring pity points and providing evidence of the laughable quality of our decision-making. I started explaining to the customs official that we were just stupid Finnish dudes who didn't account for the difference in legal age for smoking in imported tobacco, and we're not intentionally trying to break any laws or cause any harm. The customs officer just nodded, listened, and then laughed. Then he switched the topic to quizzing us about Moomins, and the works of our relatively famous designers and architects before briefly asking us what sites we were planning on seeing in Japan. As I was still on the back foot, in case this was just the latest advancement in Japanese interrogation tactics, I answered in a concise, serious, and surprised manner. He then apparently realised that he still had to do his job despite our exotic stupidity and informed us that we'd just been a little bit naughty. And for that reason, we had to pay a fine of about 1,500 yen each, about $15. But we were able to keep the cigarettes and we would be free to leave. We hastily paid the man and thanked him profusely. We led while whispering amongst ourselves, thanking our chosen deities and snickering about how even after the fine, our shopping still paid out as an investment compared to the local prices. I don't know whether we just got lucky in terms of Japanese customs, but what I do know is my reputation of Japanese authorities was enough to elicit a full confession out of me and my dumbass friends. Keep up the great work, guys. All the best. Andy from Finland. Well done,
that
Andy.
That was good. I like the idea of him funny getting, like, actually still being able to turn a profit. Well, not really a profit, but, you know, it still works out financially, fiscally responsible, even if you've paid out a 1,500 yen bloody prize, prize or fine, rather. Fantastic.
Great. It just shows illegal, that crime does important. Pay.
It really does. It really does. Yeah. And if you do get caught, just sort of play the foreigner card. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm an idiot.
Talk about the Moomins. Whip out the Moomins. Are those illegal cigarettes? Oh, but the Moomins. That was great, wasn't it? Mm. To be fair, the Moomins scared the shit out of me as a kid. I don't know if you ever saw it, but I still... It's up there with like E.T. in terms of top three things that scare the hell out of me. The Moomins was really trippy. I remember there was these really crazy characters, wide eyes, and there was like a windmill, and I don't really remember anything other than just being... creeped out by it. Did you ever watch it or see it?
I mean, I'm familiar with the characters, but yeah, I think they were... It feels like a sort of 1970s kind of thing, the Moomins. I don't know, it was quite old, like, and I guess by the time you were watching it, it was kind of a redux or a remake. But I think I kind of missed like the heyday in the late 70s, early 80s, and then kind of the second time they sort of came around, I was obviously a bit old for it. But they're very... popular. I don't know really what they do. They're like a really weird sort of fat walking cows, don't they? Very
you
weird.
Just trash the Moomins.
Well, dare you? You know, I'm sure they can take it. They're probably very financially well off.
I don't remember much other than it was creepy. And when they came on, I would switch over and watch something else. one of those things from the 90s. And speaking of trauma from the 90s, Tamagotchi's back in the news this week. The newest Tamagotchi product, shaped like a smartwatch that you can feed, evolve, and chat with. Tamagotchi watches. Exciting or disaster? Like, I don't know if you had a Tamagotchi. For me as a kid, I remember I waited like 1 year to get one. I was always behind the trends. Like, in 1995, that Buzz Lightyear toy came out, and it was really good. And all my friends got it, but I didn't. And I was really bitter. And that's why I am who I am today. You know, I'm trying to make up for that, not getting the Buzz Lightyear toy. But it was the same with Tamagotchis, and I got a Tamagotchi late. And after having it for like 2 or 3 days, it just died for no reason. So after waiting a considerable amount of time, I don't think I fed it right. I don't think I knew what I was doing, and it died. And it was a really cheap Tamagotchi, and if it died, that was it. It just wasn't operational. It just sort of fizzled out. There was no energy or power
surely
in it.
Surely you could sort of like open it up and there should be a reset button inside, surely. Sure.
I don't think there was, because I remember taking it to my mum and being like, "Mum, my Tamagotchi's dead." And she went, oh, well.
A shame, isn't it?
And then we couldn't find the reset button. And that's why I remember
sort of reading quite recently, I think maybe a friend or just some random on Twitter, sort of talking about their Tamagotchi where the button wasn't working, where you could sort of feed it. So the feeding button wouldn't work. So basically, this kid on a long distance bus journey was just forced to watch the slow death of this poor little animal because the feeding button had broken or it didn't work in the first place. Awful, awful business.
Well, I mean, I didn't know Tamagotchi's actually like a brand that's owned by Bandai Namco, who own everything in Japan that involves a toy. But it kind of makes sense. I think Tamagotchi, what does it literally mean? Tama's egg, gotchi, I don't know, got it, got an egg.
Mochi, I don't know.
Just probably look into that.
I guess so, yeah.
But it's back, and it's back on your wrist. 2021 apparently marks the 25-year anniversary of Tamagotchis. So they've decided to bring out a Tamagotchi watch.
Why don't they sort of bring out, like, you know, like you've got the smartwatches with the big, you know, watch faces and the, you know, high definition retina displays and stuff. Why don't they bring out a version of like The Sims? Because like Sims is like, you know, like an advanced version of My Little Computer Person or Tamagotchi. And why don't they bring out a version of that? So you can just look on your watch and sort of go, all right, what's he up to? What's this little chap doing?
That could be cool, actually. Like an advanced Tamagotchi, right? I mean, I think the ones they're bringing out are very kind of retro. They're mint blue and coral pink. They're super rare. There's also a super rare white version. And it costs $74, ¥7,400. So it ain't cheap for a Tamagotchi watch. I mean, yeah, I don't know if it's not really aimed at me, but it comes with a microphone and a touchscreen, which enables owners to feel like they're directly touching and talking to their digital pet, especially as the pets can recall answers given and react accordingly. And the more you chat with it, the better your bond will be. Is that anything that excites you there, Pete? Should I get you one?
If I don't talk to my parents, I'm not going to talk to a Tamagotchi, quite frankly.
Could be good. I don't know. I might buy one. I was supposed to start like a trying out cool retro Japanese tech series. And I did one on the retro Pac-Man thing. which sits behind me on the desk. Nobody watched it, and I cancelled the series, and so there's no retro games for anyone.
But I mean, like that Pac-Man thing's very. It's not quintessentially Japanese, though, is it? It's very much a global product.
It's not. Maybe I'll give it another shot with Tamagotchis. But while we're on the subject of games, unfortunately, the beloved Japanese arcades, such as Taito Station, are not having a good time at the moment. And unfortunately, a lot of them are closing down, tragically. For example, there was the iconic Sega Akihabara building that recently closed, one of the most iconic buildings in Akihabara. Shut up shop. And a big factor in that is a lack of overseas tourists and also the pandemic. Over the decades, gaming arcades in Japan have faced serious challenges, but now they're facing the new menace, the old COVID-19. Even pre-pandemic, arcades in Japan were on a downward trend. According to a police white paper, there were only 4,022 arcades across Japan in 2019, down from 26,000 in 1986. Of course, home consoles make up for that with Nintendo and Sega, but still, it's a massive drop. But I think while that's still a low number, it's still pretty cool that Japan does have these cutting-edge arcades. But I guess it's just a question of how much longer are they going to be around, really? I mean, you're a fan of them, right?
Yeah, I did, mate. I mean, it's. I think sort of just strolling around the arcade is like a quintessentially Japanese, I'm on holiday in Japan kind of thing to do. And it's so unique, and it kind of puts you in mind of enjoying the arcades when you were 10 years old, when I was like in the 1980s, in the 1990s when I was 10, going around and playing Chase HQ and Afterburner and stuff. I mean, nowadays the there are very few. I think if you take like floor space, the big arcades at like five floors in Akihabara or Shinjuku or Shibuya, you take these sort of big things, and like one floor, two floors will be pachinko. The rest of it will mainly be rhythm games. Like, that's kind of the new video games that are being made are invariably rhythm based games, because it's the sort of thing you can't reproduce really in your own bedroom, in your own little Japanese flat. And there is like a certain amount of kind of more story driven kind of shooters and arcade machines, but they're obviously losing out floor space wise.
I've always found them a bit underwhelming stuff. The shooting ones. Like, the shooting ones are always a bit tacky. The zombie ones where you have like a pistol and you've got like a button on it that throws a grenade. And I never managed to last more than like 3 minutes before I'm killed and I have to insert another $10.
But it's sad. It's really, really sad, because it's one of the last places in the world where arcades are important. And I moved into a town in Essex, and on the high street is this kind of little. This guy's got this little retro game shop, and then next door he's got like a little arcade, like a little mini arcade that you can just go in and play. And sort of barcades are sort of popping up left, right, and center, but these are very much reconditioned sort of 80s machines. You can play a bit of Outrun, play a bit of Pit Fighter, bit of Street Fighter 2, and get pissed. But it's sad, because it was a very pure gaming experience, the ones in Akihabara and Osaka and beyond. It was really sad, but it's just, it was always going to disappear. They were always going to go, and it's just the COVID-19 pandemic has really sort of doubled down on that and hastened its disappearance.
I don't know why. I don't think I've ever been to an arcade where there's like a restaurant or a bar kind of built into it, apart from the video game bar we went to. But like, you think they would try and integrate somewhere you could sort of sit and eat and chat within the arcade, because then you could actually be a bit more chilled out. Because usually what I do, I go out to like a pub or a bar or hub, God forbid, have a few drinks, and then we're like, oh, let's go to the arcade for a bit, play some Mario Kart or something. And then you kind of think, oh, I'd like something else now. And then you have to leave again. So I don't know, I don't kind of think of integrating food and drink with the arcade.
There's probably some horrific kind of gambling laws that prohibit booze and video games.
There 100% is a law there. But it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. Maybe I should do a video on the subject, because it's something I've never really covered. And it's something that I think is a big part of Japan's identity. And it's pretty cool. They've still managed to maintain 4,000. Even today, when most people seem to be addicted to games on their smartphones of all places, which isn't the same, is it? It's just not the same. We'll be back after this short break with the fax machine.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
And we're back with the fax machine. What do we got this week, Mr. Dawson, from our listeners?
We got an email from, on the fax machine, Jamie from Sydney. Hi, Chris and Pete. I'm Jamie, and I'm an avid consumer of the podcast and the YouTube channel. I recently read Dogs and Demons, The Fall of Modern Japan by Alex Kerr on Chris's recommendation. The book was published in 2001, and I want to get your opinion on whether any progress has been made to address the issues outlined in the book. We're talking environmental pollution, deforestation, large, pointless civil engineering projects in the last 20 years. I also wanted to ask how you think Japan has changed the most in the last 20 years and get your predictions of how it will look in 2041. Flying cars, all the best, guys. Jamie from Sydney. Now, me and you went out on a little trip last time I was down, and we went to the flooded like remnants of an old wedding venue, kind of social hub, and all around were these kind of like engineering projects, were just like just putting concrete upon concrete upon concrete, and road upon road upon road, that didn't really sort of lead anywhere. They weren't really needed, and they sort of ended after a certain period of time. So from my perspective, that from what I've seen, the engineering projects have certainly continued.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting topic. Like when I lived out in the sticks in sort of Yamagata, you'd be driving out in the middle of nowhere and you'd see a massive concrete kind of overpass for a highway that had been started 5 years ago but hadn't been finished. And basically, the way it works in Japan is prefectures are given a lot of money for infrastructure and they have to spend it. And if they don't spend it, their budget gets cut the next year. So they're sort of forced basically to spend money on projects that aren't necessarily needed or aren't very good. The upside being that it creates jobs and it's supposed to be sort of good for the economy. But the downside is, as a result, like, yeah, a lot of the Japanese countryside is just covered in concrete. And the coastline we went to, just north of Ishinomaki, which is badly affected by the tsunami, they've just built these massive concrete walls. And whilst I'm sure they have value for certain strategic places like nuclear power stations or villages that are kind of near the sea, they've built them sort of everywhere, even bits of land where they're not really needed. And they're a real blight on the sort of the beautiful coastline of Japan's Pacific sort of coast. And we talked about this in that documentary, the tsunami one. There was Ichio Kano, a really nice woman who tragically lost her family and has always lived by the sea, and which destroyed her house. They've built this sort of 10, 12 meter concrete wall that's just blocked her view of the sea, which she was kind of sad about, and they all are. Even though it destroyed their town, they're still kind of sad to see the sea disappear. But unfortunately, there hasn't been much progress. Like one of my favorite buildings, the Nagakin Capsule Building, which an iconic, beautiful building, is being knocked down next year in 2022, I think in around April. So I'm going to go and film that for a documentary next week, as I've always wanted to do for the last 9 years. But that's going. And, it, you know, if that was in the UK, they'd probably try and put some sort of grey-listed status on it. In Japan, old buildings do get knocked down, whether it's Harajuku Station, whether it's Sega in Akihabara, or whether it's the Nagakin Capsule Building. They just don't really seem to care as much. So it's a real shame. Yeah. But for my predictions for the future, it ain't going to change.
You said that Nagakin Capsule Building is going to be knocked down. Presumably it will be removed module by module until it's no more.
Yeah. That's just a good point.
Give it one last kind of, yeah, just give it one last fucking bit of respect and just, you know, demolish it in the way that it was meant to be demolished, piece by piece.
Well, it is like one big pile of Jenga, isn't it? Like you can pull out, allegedly you can pull out each individual capsule, although it will destroy the structural integrity of the building. But like if nobody lives there and you're getting rid of it anyway, do it. Massive Jenga. Probably won't say that in the documentary. I'll probably be a little bit more, tasteful.
A little bit more respectful.
Absolutely. Got one here from Andy in Bristol, who says, "Hey guys, following on from the kanji character topic in the last podcast, I was wondering, how does typing on a Japanese keyboard or phone work? I understand there are over 50,000 kanji characters, but with only a limited number of keys on a keyboard, which characters are on those keys and how can all 50,000 be formed from them? Thanks for the content. All the best, Andy." I mean, there's only 2,200 kanji characters, though they are made up of, I think, maybe 50,000 components. But it's pretty simple, to be honest. Say, the way I use my keyboard, I've got like a Romaji keyboard, so all characters like A, B, C, D. And say I want to type in cat, nickel, I would type in like N-E-K-O. And then the kanji character for Neko just comes up on the screen. So it's very simple. Or you could do the Japanese kind of hiragana keyboard if you really want to. But no, it's actually really easy. And that's the problem. Because it's so easy to type in words, because you just need to know them phonetically, you don't need to write them. And inevitably, you forget how to write them, as I've done over the last sort of 4 or 5 years now. So that's a real shame. But it's really easy, though.
I guess any like sort of modern techniques, kind of, you can go on like if you've got like a kanji that you've identified, you want to know what it is. As an absolute amateur, has no idea how it all works. There are like on screen kind of little pages you can draw your kanji on or have a best crack at it. And hilariously, they try and figure out what the hell you're trying to draw. It never works. It never, ever works. So, yeah, I've seen sort of people, they type in the Romaji or they type in the hiragana, and once it's, you know, registered a word that it thinks it knows what it is, it changes it to kanji. It's like a spell check a little bit, isn't it? Like if it's wrong, you can sort of go back, press backspace, and it has another crack at it, or just basically returns the hiragana side of things.
That's really cool. I mean, yeah, that's perfect. But I guess that is one of the easier aspects, though, you know, using your phone or your computer to type out kanji. It's actually a lot easier than you'd think. It's just the writing that's a nightmare. Yeah.
We've got a message. We've got a message, Chris. We've got a message.
A message?
From Elena, on the Fact Machine. "Hi, Chris and Pete. Hope you are doing well. I've been watching the Abroad Japan channel and listening to the podcast for a long time now, and I thank you both for all the work you put into it. I have one question, though. My question is, what are the pathways for a foreigner such as yourself to acquire a Japanese citizenship? Thank you for all the great content. P.S. Good luck on your next driving exam, Pete." Thank you, Elena. Got one booked. Not telling anyone when it is because it piles more pressure on myself, but hopefully I'll come through it good. But how do people sort of become, you know, Japanese citizens? I mean, I know like every now and again you'll get like a footballer, like a Brazilian footballer that's been there for absolutely ages, and you know, they'll get fit for whoever, but it must be quite difficult. I cannot imagine how many forms. I think there's like a COVID era Japanese entry form for residents, and that I think your mate Sean put on Twitter, and my God, it was something like 15 pages, and on top of that, the COVID tests. So I cannot imagine how many forms you got to fill out to become a Japanese citizen.
I mean, yeah, I dread to think. Although apparently, it's not as difficult as getting permanent residency, which is what I'm looking to get.
Right.
Because every year I have to sort of, every couple of years, 3 years, whatever, I have to renew my visa. And so it would be kind of cool to get a permanent one. But to become a citizen is a bigger deal, obviously. But it's also easier. Apparently, so here's what you need to do, because I don't know. I've just looked it up. Apparently, number one, you need to be living in Japan for 5 years before applying. Number two, you need to know basic Japanese. So even you, Pete, you know basic Japanese, right? Sorted, mate. Number three, you need to be self-supporting or married to a national that can support you financially. Number four, you need to have paid all your taxes. Always a good one. Number five, you need to be sound of mind. Would you pass that one, Pete? Did I pass that one?
Oh, yes. No, never pass that one.
But apparently 15,000 to 20,000 people are naturalized every year, although they're mostly sort of Chinese and Korean folks that live here. 52% ethnically Korean, 28% ethnically Chinese.
Interesting.
But very few are declined as long as your paperwork is in order. But I think most people just don't want to give up the citizenship of their native kind of home country. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to. But I don't really know that many people that have done it. I can't think of many off the top of my head. Obviously, if you're going to live here forever and you know it, you want to be here forever, then there's no harm in doing it, I guess. You just have to say goodbye to your old passport and you're good to go. But I don't know. I think it's something that most people listening to this will never need to consider doing or be overly keen to do. I'd recommend getting permanent residency. Unless you marry someone here and settle down and have a family, I wouldn't recommend it necessarily. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the flexibility of I think if you're coming from a first world country and your passport is pretty useful, and the British, obviously with the Brexit agreement, we it's less useful now, but it's still relatively well respected. But if you're coming from you know, like a slightly more impoverished, slightly more unstable economy and country, I think it's you know, it's a real feather in your cap to take residency and take citizenship. So
yeah, absolutely.
It depends, I suppose.
Yeah, but good question, Lena, and I'm glad I've learned what you need to do to get there, because now I know whenever I get asked. I get a lot of people ask me, like, how do I become Japanese or how do I become a citizen? And it's often very complicated. There's a lot of papers, but I was actually quite surprised that citizenship in many ways is easier, even if you do have to sacrifice more. Keep the questions, comments, everything, stories coming into broadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back on the weekend to do it all over again, guys. But for now, where are we? God, messing up my words. It's all going so well.
I know, right?
It's been a long day. It's been a long day. But wherever you might be out there in the big wide world, have yourselves a good one. And forget my awkward slip up there. Just have a great day.
You get back to your editing. Get back in your editing.
Back to editing.
You're not allowed
down to.
It's absolutely melted your brain, Chris.
It definitely has.
Abroad in Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.